Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kamma Daf Kuf Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 17 lines from the top of Daf Kuf Gimel. Before we begin the actual Gemara text, we glance in the margin where we have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads as follows: Maisa, an incident. Shirab Kahana Shilem Avor Pishton. Rav Kahana paid for flax. He was purchasing flax. Velo Moshach. And he didn't draw them unto himself, which is a form of acquisition, but he didn't do the actual drawing, but he did pay for them. Paying does not clinch deals when it comes to portables. Vehisyaker, the flax in the meantime increased in value. Their price went up. Vahabailim, the flax owners, mochru hapishton lachirim, they sold the pishton that Rav Kahana had already paid for, they sold it to others. Rashi points out that they intended to give the money for the flax that they got from their sale to others to Rav Kahana. They naturally are selling the flax at a higher price than the amount Rav Kahana paid for them, because as we said, in the interim, they increased in value. Ha'im mutar Rav Kahana lekachas hadomim? Can Rav Kahana, is he allowed to halachically accept that money, acharei shisyakir, after it went up in price? Oli, or possibly shiesh kan mishum ribis, maybe there's a problem of interest. The prohibition of interest in Jewish law extends to loans that are granted by one Jew to another, and there are other examples of interest where you gave a certain amount of money and you're going to get money in return. I'm speaking in very broad and almost vague terms, because besides the Torah prohibition of interest, which is related to a loan extended by lender to borrower, the problem of interest arises on a rabbinic level in commercial transactions as well. Here, as you can see, we're not dealing with a straightforward case of a lender and borrower. However, there is a situation where a certain amount of money was put down. Rav Kahana put down X amount of money for the flax, and at the end, the question is, can he receive more in return? During this whole time, we pointed out that Rav Kahana did not actually become the owner of the flax. There's nothing wrong with someone buying an item, becoming the owner of it, buying it at a certain price, and then selling it at a higher price later on. That's standard commercial fare. However, here, Rav Kahana did not become the owner of the flax in the interim. As we said, by simply having paid for it and not drawing it, not being moshech, not drawing it unto yourself, you do not gain actual ownership of it. Now the Gemara. Rav Kahana yoav zuzah akisna. Rav Kahana paid money for kisna, for flax. Flax are the raw material from which linens are made. L'soif eiker kisna. After a while, the flax went up in price. All that Rav Kahana had done, as we mentioned already, was he put money down for flax. He didn't actually take possession of it. In the interim, the flax went up in value. Zavnei Marvisei Dekisna, the flax owners, Marvisei is the plural form of Mar meaning the owner of. So the owners of the flax sold the flax to others at the higher price, and Rashi added, with the intent of giving that money to Rav Kahana. Also, Lekame de Rav. Rav Kahana approached Rav with the question, can I accept that money? Omar Le, my Avid, Rav Kahana asks, what should I do? Ezel Ishkal Zuzoi, do I have a right to take that money from them? Omar Le, Rav answered, E ki ka zavni amri, if when the sellers announced, ha kisna de kanahu, this is Kahana's flax. So they were, in effect, acting as agents for you in selling the flax. Zilshko, so go and take the money. The e loi lo tishko, and if that wasn't mentioned to the purchasers of the flax, then you cannot take the money because of the ribis problem. The Gemara now asks a question regarding Rav's ruling. The question, you can see, lasts a couple of lines. And the Gemara here refers to the Bnei Marova. This was an opinion that we saw back on Daf Kuf Beis. So here we're making reference to what they said there, and of course we spent a fair amount of time focusing on that sugya back on Kuf Beis on Mid Beis. So here we're going to try to be brief. Here the Gemara asks, Keman kebnei marova the amri, is Rav's ruling in the spirit of or aligned with the opinion of the bnei marova that said, Mi hodio lebal chitim shiakne chitim lebal mois? Before we go further in the Gemara and any of our own explanation, let's go immediately to Rashi. A few lines up from here in the Rashi, Keman kebnei marova bitmiha. It's read with a tone of wonderment. Klomar, the amrinon mi hodion, the parallel of bnei marova in the discussion that we had back on Kuf Beis Omid Beis, when an agent who was ordered to buy on behalf of an investor barley, and instead he made a change and he bought wheat. And we say that the owner has a right to share in the profits, but whoever transferred the wheat from the vendor, the wheat wholesaler, to the investor, when that wasn't the instruction given to the agent in the first place. So the parallel over here is Mi hodion la loitchin shiaknu moisein l'Rav Kahana, who informed the purchasers of the flax that they should transfer their money that they're paying for the flax to Rav Kahana. Lefikach lo zocha bohen, therefore Rav Kahana doesn't have any claim on the money. Let's continue in the Gemara. Otu mi yohiv Rav Kahana arba v'shokil tamni. Did Rav Kahana pay 4 and take in return 8? If he put down 4 and got back 8, that would be a problem of ribis, a problem of interest. Kisna memelohu da'iker. The flax that were his, wherever they were, and in our introduction we explained based on the end of the Gemara, based on the Gemara's response. But at this point, we should assume that the Gemara is thinking that once Rav Kahana paid for the flax, he became the owner of it. The flax went up in price, and they're his wherever they are. Migzal Gazluha, the ones who sold Rav Kana's flax, in effect, were stealing from him, selling it to others. Utnan, and we have a rule, Kol HaGazlonim Mishalmin Kishas HaGzela. Thieves pay according to the value of what the item was at the time of the theft. And in this case, at the time of the theft, the flax had already gone up in price. So why does Rav say that if the purchasers were not informed that it's Kahana's flax, that Rav Kahana doesn't have a right to the money? Is that because Rav is paralleling the B'nai Marova, who said, whoever told the owner of the wheat in that case to transfer the wheat to the investor, paralleling over here, whoever told the buyers of the flax to transfer their money to Rav Kahana? Is that an argument at all? Absolutely not. These flax sellers stole, in their sale to others, Rav Kahana's flax. They have to pay the higher price to Rav Kahana, whether or not they informed the flax purchasers that it's Rav Kahana's. The Gemara answers, Amri, in order to understand what Rav had ruled, we now provide you with an understanding. Hosam amono havoi velo mashchei Rav Kahana lekisna. Here, we see what we had explained at the outset, that Rav Kahana had not actually become the owner of the flax. Here it was money, amona, from the word omein, on good faith. Here, Rav Kahana put down money on good faith that he would get the product later on. It would be delivered to him. He would do meshicha, an actual kinyan, an actual act of possession he would do later on. In the meantime, though, Rav Kahana did not become the owner of it. Now the question is, can Rav Kahana take the greater amount? The Rav Litame, Rav, in saying that he cannot take the greater amount unless the purchasers were informed, but focusing on Rav's ruling that if the purchasers were not informed that it's Rav Kahana's flax, then we'll understand now why Rav said it's forbidden for Rav Kahana to take the greater amount of money. Rav Litame, Rav, in his ruling, is consistent with what he says elsewhere. The Omar Rav, Oisin Amona Beperos, Vein Oisin Amona Bedomim. All of this has to do with the topic of ribbis. And we're dealing here with a rabbinic level of ribbis, a rabbinic level of interest. And as we mentioned earlier, the issue of interest prohibition on a rabbinic level extends to commercial transactions. Rav says that a person is entitled to put down money in anticipation of getting fruits, even if the fruits that will be delivered to him later went up in value. In other words, if he paid at the beginning, let's just say for argument's sake, a dollar for a pound of apples, and at delivery time, 1 pound of apples was worth $2. It's mutter to accept the 1 pound of apples at that later date, even though they are worth more the amount of money you put down for them. However, Eino Yisinamona Bedomim, that Rav says, tells us that if you put down a dollar for a pound of apples, and when the delivery date came around, they didn't deliver apples, but rather money of apple value at that time was offered. There, Rav says, you cannot take the money value of the higher priced fruits, because that looks like interest. Why? You put down $1, and you're going to get back the value of the higher value of the fruits later, you're going to get back $2. So putting down $1 and getting back $2, that looks like interest. That looks like a case where a lender gave you $1, and he said, I'll lend you the money, $1, if you pay me back interest amounting to $2. That, of course, is forbidden. So what Rav said here to Rav Kahana was that if it was not announced to those purchasers that this is Kahana's flax, then you cannot take the money that was paid by those purchasers to the flax owners, because you put down a lesser amount of money and you would be getting later on in return a greater amount of money. The Mishnah. Before we go into the Mishnah itself, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading. We call the Nosei Klali a general topic heading. We have a topic that extends to Daf Kuf Dalet Omid Aleph, a rather long topic. And we call it Hashava Ma'alya. Hashava means returning. Return, let us say, of a stolen item. Hashava Ma'alya, a best quality form of return. And a highest level responsible quality return. What do we mean by that? We'll appreciate that as we go into the Gemara and see examples. The Mishnah. Hagezel es chavero shove pruto. Person stole an item worth a shove pruto. That's the minimum amount of cash value. Ve nishba loy. And this fellow swore that he doesn't have it, he never stole, he swore falsely, he lied, and then confessed. Yolichenu achrov afilu lemodai. You have to bring it to the victim. The thief has to return the item to the victim, even if it's a matter of his traveling a great distance. Modai being a country far away. Maybe you've heard of Poras Umodai from the Megillus Esther fame. Lo yitain, lo livno v'lo l'shlucho. The thief is not to give the item, the stolen item, to the son of the nigzal, the son of the victim, to bring it to his father. Lo l'shlucho, nor should the thief give it to the nigzal's, the victim's agent. Avol noisein l'shliach beizdin. However, if you have a court-appointed agent there, we say the thief can give it to the court-appointed agent. V'im meis, if the victim of the theft dies, yachzir l'yorshav, then the thief shall return it to the nigzal's heirs. A few points that we just read, we will now look in Rashi. Lo yitain lo livno, Rashi toward the end of the narrow line says, shel nigzal, lo licho le nigzal, do not give it to the son of the victim to bring it to his dad, the nigzal. Shim yansuhu, the problem is that if some ones, some loss, occurs beyond his control, chayov lahachzir, the lohavi ashova demoti liyodei kidamoron. If anything happens on the way, it will not, the thief will not have fulfilled his obligation, because in the case of a thief having sworn falsely and about a theft he committed and then admitted, he has to return it he has to do what's called hashova ma'alya, return it to the nigzal himself. And this is based on a pasuk, which we'll see quoted in the Gemara. Rashi quotes it on his commentary on the Mishnah, La'asher hu lo, you shall return it to the one to whom it belongs. So that until that happens, if any onus arises, any cause of loss, even if it's uncontrollable, the thief will still have to make good on it. So the Mishnah is saying, it's not advisable for the thief to give it to the son or the agent of the victim. However, when it comes to a court-appointed agent, Rashi says, L'shiach bezin, takantahu, David Rabbonon, the rabbis made a special enactment, mitnei takonas hashavim, for the benefit of those that are trying to repent, so as to free the thief from having to spend a lot of money. Imagine you'd have to spend, if we're insisting on you having to return it to the hands of the victim and the victim lives far away, you might end up spending more money than the item is actually worth. So there's a special takona called Takonas HaShavim, an enactment for the benefit of Shavim, those that are trying to return, to repent, that you can give it to that kind of agent, if it's a court appointed. We continue. Nosan Loi Esakeren. You'll notice that we've broken down the Mishnah with Roman numerals and we have diamonds here. Roman numeral number one is where the principle has been, we'll say, taken care of. There's no more principle left. The Roman number two is a series of points where the principle is yet outstanding. The Mishnah continues. Nosan lo es hakeren, velo nosan lo es hachomesh. The thief paid the principal, but he didn't pay the additional fifth that the Torah demands for someone who swore falsely. Mocha lo al hakeren, velo mocha lo al hachomesh. The owner forfeited or forgave the owner, for the thief, for the principal, but not for the additional fifth. That he still anticipates getting paid. Mochalo al ze v'al ze chutz mi pochus mi shavar pruta b'keren. Let's say the owner forgave the thief on the fifth that he would need to add, and on almost all of the principal, with the exception of pochus mi shavar pruta, where the owner anticipates getting less than a pruta worth of the item stolen, that is. Eino tzorech leilich achrov. Under circumstances like this, the halacha does not insist on the thief going literally to the victim for return purposes. In contrast, nosan loy es hachomesh velo nosan lo es hakeren. Let us say the thief paid the fifth, but didn't pay the principal. Mochal lo ala chomesh velo mochal lo ala keren. Or the victim forgave him regarding the added fifth, but not for the principal. Mochal loy al ze v'al ze chutz mishove pruta b'keren. The thief was forgiven by the owner, both for the fifth and almost all of the principal, except for a shove pruta, a complete pruta worth of principal. Tzorech leilech achrov. There, the thief still has to go all the way to wherever the victim is and return that which he has to return. In this last example, a shoved pruta worth of the principal. The Mishnah continues with a new trend of thought, a new point. We'll read the Mishnah and then the Rashi commentary. Nosan lo es hakeren. The thief paid the principal after he had sworn falsely and admitted, which of course obligates him to pay principal plus a fifth. So after that false oath, he paid the principal. V'nishba lo ala chomesh. And then he swore a second oath, a false oath, concerning the fifth, claiming that he already paid up the fifth. And then he admits that he lied that time as well. Rashi at the bottom, second line from the bottom, Losan lo yasakeren, li'achar shenishba v'hoideh. He paid the principal after he had already sworn falsely and confessed. V'nishayev keren v'chomesh, and at that point he became obligated to pay the principal and the fifth. And as we saw in the mission, he paid the principal. Nishbalo shvushniya ala chaimesh nasaloi v'hoide. And then he swore a false oath concerning the fifth, claiming that he paid it when he didn't pay the fifth, and then admitted. we now continue to Amud Beis. The Mishnah continues at the top. Harei ze mishalem chomesh al chomesh. He has to now add a fifth for the fifth concerning which he had lied. In other words, once he became obligated to pay the principal and the fifth, in our mind's eye, that additional fifth becomes a new principal that he owes, a new principal amount. So that if he had, let us say, we're going to use numbers, and they're not numbers that are precise in halachic terms. We're going to use numbers that are simply for illustration purposes. We'll call them round numbers. And I know that for those who are expert in these matters of calculating a fifth, you'll note there's a certain amount of inaccuracy in what we're saying. But for illustration purposes only, person, let us say, stole $100 of value. And he swore falsely that he didn't owe the $100. I never stole it. And he swore, as we say, swore to that effect, and then admitted. So in addition to having to pay $100, he has to pay a fifth. So a fifth of $100 is, we'll say, $20. Truth of the matter is, I mentioned before, when it weren't being 100% accurate, because in calculating a fifth, we often calculate a fifth by dividing the original number into four parts and adding one, so a fifth would be $25 in this case. So if you say that, he then owes, besides the principal of $100, he owes another fifth. If you want to say $25, so be it. He then paid the Karen. And what about the $25 fifth that he still added? He swore that he paid that up, a second oath, and then he of obviously lying, and then he confessed. So we say that the $25 debt that we originally called chomesh became a new principal. So now he has to pay a fifth of that. So if you take a fifth of 25, your first reaction would be $5. Even though you'd really have to take 25, divide it into four parts, and add one part of that. But just to keep numbers round for our illustration purposes, he then, after swearing falsely about that $25, he has to add another fifth, $5. Then he pays the $25, but he doesn't pay that additional five. He swears, "I already paid you." And then he admits, "No, I didn't pay that yet." So he swore again about $5, falsely. He has to add a fifth to that. Now a fifth of five, again, superficially, would be one. At this point, though, if he's going to swear subsequently that I paid you the one, and it turns out that he's lying, the fifth now is less than a shava pruta. I was using the example of dollars along the way. It would have been better for me to use examples of 100 prutos, then a fifth of that would be the 25, and then a fifth of that, we said, the 5 prutos, and then a fifth of that, 1 pruta. And now if he's going to swear falsely about that, this is the situation we have in the Mishnah. HaReizem Mishalem Chomesh Al Chomesh Ad Sheyismait HaKeren Mishava Pruta. Until the amount that he denies is worth less than a shava pruta. So at the point that he owed a fifth that was one pruta, so he'll have to add a fifth to that. But the fifth of that, the one-fifth pruta, is now an amount that is less than a pruta. Rashi, on the second line from the top, says, "Av shi yismait, shim chozer v'nosam lo yichomesh rishon v'nishbal hasheni." If he paid the first fifth and then swore falsely about the second, the one, that means the fifth of the fifth, v'hoide mishalem chumsho v'chumsho shechomesh sheni v'chein le'olam. This need to constantly repay the fifth of the fifth that you swore falsely about continues until the final, till you get to a stage where the fifth that you're denying is worth less than a shaveh pruta. We continue in the Mishnah, v'chein bepikadon, and the same with regard to an entrusted article, meaning not just what we've said till now had to do, we were using examples of theft, the same applies to a false oath concerning an entrusted article, a shomer who swore falsely that he doesn't have, he gave back the item, or he denies having the item, and he in fact has it. Shenemar, the posuk says, now we have a text that's printed in the Mishnah, but when you look in a Chumash, the word O doesn't appear at this point. It rather says bepikadon, o betsumas yad, o begozel, o yoshak es amisai. A false oath concerning a pikod, an entrusted item. Tsumas yad is a loan, owing a debt of having borrowed money, and then you swear falsely concerning owing that money. O begozel, or a matter of theft. O oshak es amiso. Oshak is a, as Rashi says, har socher, it's withholding of wages, where an employer claims he paid money that he owes workers and he didn't. The Pasuk goes on, Pasuk Chav Bei says, O imotso aveda, or he found a lost article, v'chi cheshpo, and denied it, v'nishpa l'sheker, and he swore falsely. Concerning all of these cases, hareza mishalim keren, v'choymesh v'asham. He'll have to pay the principal after having sworn falsely and then admitting that he swore falsely. He'll have to pay the principal and an additional fifth and an osham, a guilt offering, a sacrifice has to be brought. We recommend looking into the psukim in Vayikra Perek Hay, psukim Chof Aleph through Chof Dalet. Before we go further into the Gemara, it's worthwhile to read the psukim together, get a flavor of the psukim. The Gemara will be making references to different parts of these verses. So in Vayikra Perek Hey, Pasuk Chof Aleph, it says, Nefesh kisechta umualo mal bashem, v'chichesh bamiso, a person who sins. He sins, he commits an affront against the Almighty, and he denies to his fellow man. We explained all of those already. And Pasuk Chav Beis also, we saw, and he swore falsely, denying having these things. Al achas mikol asher yase odom lachtoi bohema. Pasuk of Gimel, v'hoyo kiyechto v'yoshem, and when he sins, v'heishiv esagzeilo, he now has to repent and return the item. And here the pasuk lists off the items that he has to return. V'heishiv esagzeilo asher gozal, o'yashek asher oshak, whether it's the theft, whether it's the withheld wages, o'es hapikodon asher hofkad ito, or the entrusted article, o'es ho'aved asher motzo, or the lost item that he found. Concerning all these that he swore falsely about, he has to pay the principal, and the fifth. Unto the one that he owes the money, he shall make the return. The psukim go on to talk about the guilt offering, the sacrifice, and which is brought to the Beis Hamikdash, but that's beyond the scope of our current discussion. Let us now go back to the Gemara. On the side, we have a topic heading, which will be relevant in a moment, but the Gemara opens up before we read the topic heading. Nishba lo'in. Our Mishnah spoke about having to go out of your way to return the article to the victim. And it stated this need in the context of coming on the heels of a false oath. Meaning only if the thief had sworn falsely, then then admitted, then he has to go all the way to the victim wherever he may be. Lo nishba lo, lo. But if, and we would infer from the Mishnah that if there wasn't a false oath in the picture, then there would be no need to go out of your way until it gets to his hands. Money, the Gemara asks, according to whom is this approach? That it all depends on the idea of making a return, the required return, or the exceptional level return all the way to the owner's hands, is all dependent on the oath having been taken, the false oath. Money, lo Rabbi Tarfon v'lo Rabbi Akiva, that doesn't conform to either the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon nor Rabbi Akiva. And on the side of the Gemara, we have our subtopic heading, Tatnose, it's a subtopic. Gosel echod mechamisha, a man stole from one of five people. At the end of the day, he's a man, but he doesn't know from whom he stole. Machloikis tanoim ech machsir hagezel. We'll see a disagreement between tanoim, Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva by name. How is he to return? Bear in mind as we go through our long question, the question being, our Mishnah is authored by whom? Our Mishnah puts the emphasis on the oath, the false oath. If there's a false oath involved, besides the wrongful act of theft, if there's a false oath involved, then you've got to make the high-level type return to the hands of the victim. If not, then you don't have to go that far. You don't have to go out of your way. Who would author that? So we're saying it doesn't seem to be Rabbi Tarfon nor Rabbi Akiva. Desanya, gozal echot mechamisha v'eino yodea eizu mehen. A man stole from one of five people and doesn't know who was the actual owner of the item that he stole. V'chol echad oimer oisi gozal. And each one is saying, he stole from me. Meniach gzeila b'neim u'mestalek divrei Rabbi Tarfon. The thief places down the stolen item, literally places it between them, and walks away. The emphasis for our purposes, you don't have to return it to the hand of the one from whom you stole. You'll say, but he doesn't know from whom. Well, listen to this. Rabbi Akiva Omer, lo zu derech motziosu midei avera. Placing it down amongst them is not a way to exempt yourself or to repent from the sin. Achi yishalim zeilu l'chol echad v'echad. If you want to achieve true penitence, you have to return the item, or the value of the item, to each one of those people. Because only then do you know that you will have given it to the actual victim. Money, our Mishnah, is in accordance with whom? E, Rabbi Tarfon, if you think it's according to Rabbi Tarfon, Afagav Dishtaba, Omar Menir Gezela Benem Mestalek. Even if you had sworn falsely, it would have been enough, as far as Rabbi Tarfon is concerned, to place the theft, the item of theft, amongst them and walk away. Rabbi Akiva, hafagav de lo ishtaba, omar ad shi yishalim gezeilo lochol echad v'echad. And if you were to think that our mission is in accordance with Rabbi Akiva, even without an oath, he requires you to pay to each one. In other words, a hashava ma'aliyah. Remember, I used that term before. Proper, full-fledged return is only until it gets to the hands of the actual victim, regardless of whether there was an oath. And our Mishnah places all of the emphasis on the oath. We now turn to an answer. We have a marking, and you'll notice there's also a numbering. We're calling it number one. If you drop down to the lower part of the page, allow your eyes to skim quickly, you'll see a number two, a bow tie number two, and there's actually another one on the next omid, on Daf Kuf Dalid, omid Aleph at the top line. On the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei / Mivneh heading, we indicate that the bow ties are Gimel Gishos, three approaches, La'anis La'Sheila, Moni Mas Nisen. Who is our Mishnah? Who is the author of our Mishnah? The Rak Benishba, the Hoide chayav lahoylich hagzelo achrov afilu lamodai. Only in a case of a false oath and subsequent confession does the Mishnah require this full-fledged return or high-level return. So far, we don't seem to have an author for that. So now we turn to the Gemara, Li'olam Rabbi Akiva Hi. Our Mishnah is, in fact, in accordance with Rabbi Akiva, V'chikom Rabbi Akiva, Ad Shishalim Gzeilu Cholecha V'echad. Rabbi Akiva, in the source, where he said, payment is not fulfilled until you pay to each one, Hechodish Tabu Degomar. It's only where the thief had sworn falsely. My time off. What's the basis for saying that? The Yomar Krah, the pasuk that speaks about full-fledged return, high-quality return, is pasuk Chof Dalet that we referred to earlier, that's found in the context of a false oath. The pasuk says, "Lasher ulo yitnenu biyoyim ashmosoi." Unto him from whom you stole it, you shall pay. Now, we emphasize that pasuk was in the context of a false oath. So, if you want to make reference to a full-fledged return to the, you must return to the one from whom you stole it. Yes, the Torah obligates that, but only in the context of a false oath having been made. Rabbi Tarfon's response to this, because we are citing a pasuk, and yet Rabbi Tarfon says you don't have to go through the full-fledged return. It's enough to put it down amongst them and let the hope that the owner recovers it. Rabbi Tarfon, even though there was a false oath, the rabbis made an enactment for the benefit of a thief that wants to repent. And the Sanya, here we have a Tanaic source. In this source, we have a situation of someone who stole and swore falsely and admitted. And the Nigzal is not here. The victim of the theft is not present. The Sanya, Rebelozer Brebitzodik Oimer, Takona Gedoyla Hiskinu. A very great enactment was enacted. She'im hoisa hoitsa yesera la keren. If the expenses, the traveling expenses, exceed the value of the principal of the item that was stolen, mishalim keren v'choymish lebeizdin, the thief shall pay the principal and the fifth to the court. Umevi ashamu miskabelo, and he brings his guilt offering and achieves Kapora being atonement. So what's Rabbi Tarfon pointing out? That even in cases of false oath, there is a special dispensation made for the thief, whereby he doesn't have to actually return it to the hands of the victim. The Rabbi Akiva, what does he say? Because Rabbi Kiva, we saw, insists on full-fledged return, literal return. Ki ovid rabbona takanta, when do we find the rabbona making an enactment? Hecho di yoda leman gazle, de komahade le mamona lemore. That's where you know who the victim of the theft was, like the case in the Brisa. In the Tanaic source we just read, you knew who the victim was. It's just that he was so far away, so the rabbis made a special enactment to deposit the money in the court and be done with it. Aval gazal echod mechamisha de lo yoda leman gazle de lo hoder mamona lemore. However, in the case that I refer to, says Rabbi Kiva, where he stole from one of five people, he doesn't know from whom he stole, where he doesn't know that the money is going back to the actual owner. Lo ovid rabbona takanta, the rabbona did not make any special enactment to make life easier for the thief until he pays to each one of the five possible actual victims. Mosiv Rav Huna bar Yehuda. Note, we have a long question, and on the side of the Gemara, we have a mivneh, a structural note. These are kushyos, these are questions, al hanisayon lahamid ha-mishnah k'Rabbi Akiva. We have a triangle here. We do note that we have a long marking, but it's comprised of two questions. So that the triangle that you see here is followed by another triangle on the third wide line, where the Gemara says V'oid Masiv Rava. In other words, there's an additional question that's raised, and the details will be forthcoming as we go through the Gemara. But in the meantime, we've attempted to set up our Mishnah in accordance with Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva's whole din of having to go out of your way to make a high level return is only under circumstances that there was a false oath as well. Mosiv Rav Huna Bar Yehuda, Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Lo Nechliku Rabbi Tarfon Rabbi Akiva Al Shelokach Echod Mechamish Ben Yudem Ezemein Lokach. Notice we've dashed on the line lokach to draw your attention. Here we're dealing with a sale, a purchase. Someone bought something. He bought an item from one of five people, but he doesn't know who the owner was. He's in doubt. I don't know if it's this guy that I bought from or from that guy. But there are five people that are part of the doubt. What about who am I going to pay to now? Sheminiach demei mekach beinehem umistalek. That even Rabbi Akiva will concede that it's enough that the purchaser puts the money down amongst the five people, one of whom was the actual owner, and be done with it. Mistalik means, and the purchaser leaves. Alma nechliku, under what circumstances do Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon argue? Shegozal, again, we dashed on the line this word to draw your attention. The machlokis, Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva, concerns a case of theft. Shegozal echad mechamish bnei adam ve'ene yedem me'ezem me'en gozal. He stole from one of five people, doesn't know from whom he actually stole it. Rabbi Tarfon omer me'niyach de'me'gezela b'neim mistalek. Rabbi Tarfon says it's enough that you place the amount of the value of the stolen item amongst them, the one of whom is the actual owner, and you can depart. You, as the thief, have fulfilled your obligations. For Rabbi Akiva, Omer, Ein lo takona ad sheyishalem gezeilo lechol echad ve'echad. There's no penitence. Takona means literally fixing. There's no restitution until he pays the amount to each one. If you were to think that Rabbi Akiva said his rule of Hashava Ma'al Yisa as a result of a false oath, then Mali Lokach Mali Gozal, why would there be any distinction made? Let us take a look at the Rashi. The Rashi is about the last, say, quarter of the Rashi commentary. Mali lokeach, hare, nishba l'sheker, he swore falsely, yashwa sheku ksiv l'asher, hu loy. In the Torah, where the Torah made reference to give it back to the actual man from whom you took it. Bein agezel, bein atsumes yad beheteros liyadi, whether it be a case of theft, or a case of a loan. You borrowed money. Now, you borrowed money. You got the money in under legitimate circumstances. In the case of a purchase also, you got it under legitimate circumstances. Yet, the Torah says that where there's a false oath, you have to lasher hulo. You've got to return it to the person himself. So, if Rabbi Akiva is making his, or states his halacha of the need to return to each one because of a false oath, why is there any distinction between lokach versus gozal? Now, if a distinction in fact is being made, it's more likely that Rabbi Kiva said his point of Hashofa Ma'al Yisah even without a Shavua, even without the issue of a false oath. And if that be the case, our Mishnah then doesn't follow Rabbi Akiva, because our Mishnah placed the emphasis on the false oath. We continue in the Gemara. V'oid Mosiv Rava Maisa B'chosid Echad Shelokach Mishnei B'nei Odom. An incident involving a pious individual. We saw a reference to a Chosid Echad back on Daf Pei Omen Aleph. If you remember the incident with the goat tied to the bed, Chosid Echad, as we'll see very shortly, is a reference to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beloi, very pious individuals. So we have a story here of a chosid echad, shalokach mishnei ben Aram v'lo yudem ezimein lokach. He purchased something from one of two people. He doesn't know who the actual seller was. Ubalifnei Rabbi Tarfon. The case came to Rabbi Tarfon. Omer lo hanoch de mei mekcha beineum v'stalik. Put down the purchase price between them and depart. Baal lefnei Rabbi Kiva, omalo, ein luchotakonachi tishalein lucholechod vechod. You have no solution until you pay each one, pay both parties. V'isaka daitach de mishtaba, if you're going to think like we said originally, that Rabbi Akiva's din of the need to pay each one is only where a false oath had been made. Chosid bi mishtaba b'shikra. Would a pious person have sworn falsely, lied under oath? The chiteimo de mishtaba v'adar abichosid. You might say, well, he swore falsely and then became a chosid, then became a pious one. But that's not likely. V'hal kol heichod amrino and ma'ase b'chosid echad. We have a tradition that wherever you see that introduction, a story with a pious person, O Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, O Rabbi Yehuda ben Beloi, it is a reference to either one of these two great Tanoim. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beloi, Chasidim de Meikar Havu. They were pious from the outset. So a person who was described as pious from his youth, pious from birth onwards, he wouldn't have sworn falsely. And yet you see, Rabbi Akiva is requiring Asher Tishalim L'Cholech L'Vechad Hashav Amal Yisah, even without the false oath. So what about authorship of our Mishnah that says Hashav Amal Yisah is dependent on the false oath? Ela Li'olam Rabbi Tarfon Hi. Our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Tarfon. Umoide Rabbi Tarfon Hei Chodishtaba. Rabbi Tarfon, who up till now we've seen is quite lenient with regard to his return requirements, however, he will admit, he will confess, or actually he will concede. Rabbi Tarfon will concede that that it must reach the hands of the victim of the theft when the thief had sworn falsely. In other words, where you add that factor, that additional sin of having sworn falsely, you've got to, according to Rabbi Tarfon, you've got to bring it to the individual himself. And he wouldn't say, Miniach Beineyam Umistalik, leave it between them and go away. My Taima, what is the basis for that? And we pointed out that this pasuk is in the context of a false oath. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, says even without a false oath, we nevertheless impose this knas, this fine, upon a wrongdoer, and hence having to return to each one. If you are a thief, even without having sworn falsely, you've got to return to each one. Up till this point, we are establishing our Mishnah like Rabbi Tarfon. But now we raise a question. Verebi Tarfin. Michti. Let's look into this. Hecha de Mishtaba, where a false oath was made. Lo Sagya de Lohoida, in order to speak about the obligation of returning to each individual, there would also have to have been confession. Once we make it clear that part of this high-level return expectation is associated with the offender having confessed, Ma'iri of Anishba, why make mention of the false oath to begin with? Afilu below Shvua Nami, even without a false oath, we will see that Rabbi Tarfon is Machmir. Rabbi Tarfon assumes the high level requirement even without the false oath. There's a Rashi that's important for background purposes. Three lines from the end. Lo Sagya de Lohoda. We mentioned that even if you speak about a false oath, there has to be confession. The Kapora Vehishavon Dekra Ahidiksiv. Atonement and Hishavon means the return of the stolen item that are spoken of in the Pasuk, are spoken of in the context of Hoidah, of confession. Dichtiv Begezel Hager, regarding a case where someone steals from a ger, a convert. The Pasuk says in Sefer Bamidbar, Perikei Pasuk Zayin, Vehisvadu es chatosom, and they shall confess their sin. And we are understanding that that is a verse even exclusive of a false oath having been taken. And in fact, we find Rabbi Tarfon applying his high standard of return even without a false oath being present. And we continue in the Gemara. Desanya Moide Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon, who we have seen in the past was lenient with regard to his return requirement, he will concede Ba'omer Lishnayim, where a person said to two, Gazalti Echad Mikem, one of Yeini Yudea Me'eza Mikem. I stole money from one of you, but I don't know from whom. And we've written in between the lines, he's Moide. And there's no previous oath here. Rabbi Tarfon, though, says, you've got to return the money, the amount of money to this one and to that one. And we continue at the top of Daf Kuv Dalet, Shikvar Hoide Mipi Atzmo, because he confessed on his own. Well, here you see that our Mishnah then cannot be set up like Rabbi Tarfon. Our Mishnah mentions the high level responsibility of return only in the context of an oath, a false oath having been taken, having been made. Elo Omar Rava. Rava comes up with his approach. Who is the author of the Mishnah? In fact, the Mishnah could be authored by all. Shiny Masnisen, our Mishnah is different. De Kevon de Yoda Leman Gazle Ve Oidile, since he knows from whom he stole, and the thief admitted, he came forth with his confession. Kevon de Efshir Ladure Memoina Lemore, since he has this possibility of returning the money to the actual owner. Again, I emphasize, and he's confessed it. Havale, it becomes like Keman de Omar Le Yuli Biodcha. It's as if the victim, the Nigzal, says, my thing, the item that you stole, keep it in the meantime, as an entrusted item, as a pikodom. Hilkoch. Nishba, in a case where he swore falsely before his confession, Even though the victim eventually says, keep it in the as an entrusted item, as a pikadon in the meantime. Even though he says that at the time that the thief confesses, Kevon deboi kapora, since the thief needs atonement for the false oath that he had taken earlier, lo sagi ademoti liode, in order to achieve atonement for the false oath, you've got to bring it to the hand of the victim himself. You've got to fulfill hashova mal yisah, full high quality return. Ha lo ishtaba, if however he didn't swear falsely, havi gabe pikodon, it can be viewed as an entrusted article ad de osi vishokile, until the nigzal comes himself and takes it. The new factor that we've introduced here is the conversion of the issue from being theft to an entrusted article. So it's true that we saw before Rabbi Tarfon speaking of Hashava Ma'alyasa with mere confession, but that was in a case where you didn't know from whom you stole. But where you knew, where you know who the owner is, we have this additional, let's say, flexibility or ability to apply the pikadon analysis. And once we look at it as a pikadon, it's no longer viewed as a theft. We don't require the hashava ma'al yisa. Our Mishnah, on the other hand, involved a case of a false oath. And for the atonement for having sworn falsely, the pikadon analysis is not sufficient to warrant a low-level return. But rather, you have to bring it to the person, even if he lives in Modai. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.